Hello and welcome to the Mind Body Spirit Festival podcast. I am your host, Rach Cox, and I am thrilled to be interviewing some of the world's best known experts in both well-being and spirituality. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. Thank you, Donna, for coming on and letting me have a little chin wag with you. This is Donna Noble. A great name. I like to call you Nobel, actually, much like the prize.
I love that.
So Donna is a well-being coach, a speaker, educator, author, body positive, social justice and diversity and inclusion activist. You've got quite the array of talents there, mate. And you're the founder of Curvesome Yoga, which aims to show that everybody has a yoga body. Yes. Brilliant. So how did this all come about, babes?
Well, it all came about back in the late 1990s when a friend of mine saw a picture of Madonna in one of the newspapers and said she was very much into what celebrity trends were, etc. Madonna was looking good. So she said, let's give yoga a go, because it was attributed to her yoga practice. So I said yes. And we were lucky enough, Rachel, to have a yoga teacher or a trainee yoga teacher who was a colleague who said that we could be a guinea pigs. And that's how I started my yoga journey. Didn't realise how transformational it was going to be. Did a few sessions with her. And then I decided I wanted to find a class where it was beginner level type thing. So it was, you know, I didn't want to go in there and couldn't get my leg behind my head or looks really silly type thing. But gave up the yoga after a while because I became very busy with life. I was about to go off and study for my master's degree. And as you do, you think, well, I can give up yoga. I'm not realising how transformational it's going to be in my life. And many years later, fortunately for me, it came back into my life, and that's when I think the transformation began to happen. I became ill with Bell's palsy, and yoga was instrumental in my healing process because it showed me that the illness was there and was dormant for some time. But yoga allowed me to slow down, began to allow me to connect with myself, withdraw, and see that the life I was living wasn't for me, that I was basically unhappy. And I was lucky enough, and I think we worked at the same company actually.
We did.
I was then able to get redundancy. And at that point, I still didn't even view yoga as being a career path. But at that time, a friend of mine had also said, Donna, you need a plan B. And I thought, what do you mean plan B? I'm living the life as they tell us we do, Rachel. You know, the house, the car, the job, the career. And and then the one thing I liked at the time was yoga. And I was a person that studied a lot. So I thought, you know what, just in case when I retire, I want something to do, yoga would be it. So let me do this course. And anyone that knows me, Rachel, I would do things in the quickest time possible. But the fact that it took me 18 months, because I could only afford one weekend per month to do it at Tri Yoga, shows you that it was really on the back burner. It wasn't something that I thought I'd be doing. But the universe or whatever, Rachel, redundancy came up. I still was going to go back into corporate because it still wasn't dawned on me that this could be a career path until the NLP trainer said, Donna, what's going on with you? And I said, I don't know what I want to do in my life. She said, of course you do. I said, no, I don't. She said, yes, you do. She said, Donna, when you talk about yoga, you light up. And when you talk about corporate, you don't. And in that instant, Rachel, I started my Bikram journey. I was loving Bikram. And then I said, you know what? Finish the Tri Yoga training and then go off to LA for 9 weeks. So I went off to LA for what should have been a 9-week journey and stayed for 6 months in cocoon, this yoga bubble, traveled to LA, then off to New York, and then to Texas, where I was able to teach yoga and do what I love. And basically came back with the intention of going into the hot yoga studios and teaching, and that's what I did. But whilst I was there, I began to see after my illness that my body was an amazing tool. So I moved away from how my body looked, began to realise how an amazing vessel my body was, because it began to heal organically in spite of me. And came back, and that was back in 2012, I think it was, and the rest of this history. So I became, began to become very body positive without even knowing it there until basically.
Through your own experience, really.
Yeah, so it was experience. And then the time when it really, I became really body positive because I read about someone called Deborah Coughlin. She wrote an article in The Guardian called Fat Girls Do Yoga Too. And I was so distressed about what I read that when she went to classes, she was ignored by the teachers and stared at by other practitioners. And I thought, that's not what yoga's about. No. And then it was like, suddenly, like, what can I do to change this? And I'd had a coach at the time and said, what can I do? And she said, Donna, to do something about it. And I didn't know what to do. And I thought, I need to create Curvesome Yoga, which I didn't know at the time, but I wanted a name that would make it stand out. And I liked curvy. And I thought, mm-hmm. I Googled everything and found every permutation of curvy that had gone, but I was wrong. But I liked wholesome. And I thought, wholesome sounds like bread. Wholesome yoga sounds like bread. I didn't like it.
And the gluten intolerant people would not be coming, would they, darling? Exactly. CX would be out, not yeah. inclusive.
Exactly. So I had this inspired idea then, Rachel, to put curve and then some together. And that's when Curvesome Yoga was born. And it made me see at that point who else was missing from the yoga space and how could I go out there and reach them. And that was back in 2015 was like when I began to maybe inadvertently niche. And didn't even realize that I was becoming body positive and I was doing something that no one else was doing in the UK at the time and got pushed back from friends because you're not curvy, you can't teach the curvy people. And yet now it's very trendy, Rachel.
That's a point I was going to say. So you and I both are inclusive yoga teachers and we both have what is probably known as skinny privilege. However, what you can't see are the other parts that make us an ally for all types because, you know, we're both physically able as well, but I don't think that precludes us from being inclusive or aware or an ally or educated. So what would you, since you brought that up, that's a good one, babe.
Yeah, because I hid for a long time, Rachel, for that very reason, because, friends were like, you're not curvy, you can't teach to curvy people. And it wasn't until somebody actually said, you don't have to be gay to advocate for gay rights. And that was it.
Exactly.
I was off and that was it. You know, the rest was history.
That was my example because you could be an ally for us queers. Do you know what I mean? It's no different at all. Allies and ally.
Yeah, exactly.
As long as you're educated and you know what you're on about and stay open to education, all good.
Yeah, exactly.
And when we do suffer with something that society potentially outcasts or stops you being involved in, sometimes you shut down your own learning. So I've spoken to different people from different walks of life. And because I specifically learn about things, I can go to them, oh, so I know this about a body that's in this way or with this particular differently abled situation. And they're like, oh, I never knew that. And it's because you shut yourself down because you're in that position of lack of privilege and entitlement. So, yeah, it's a great thing that you're doing, babes. I'm a fan.
And likewise with you. Thank you.
And I'm just going to also touch on the subject that you and I have passed lives together very quickly.
We do. And we didn't even know at the time.
We didn't know at the time. It was lovely Leslie, who was our common friend, who told us we both worked for a particular law firm. It was the first law firm I worked for. Back in the day.
Yeah.
I think I left in 2009 and you were there till
2011. So our path, and I joined 2001. So our path would have crossed somewhere
totally.
In the hallows of that building.
We were such high-flying corporate babes, weren't we?
We were. You were on the legal side. I was in the IT side.
So you're bringing one of your body positive yoga workshops to Mind Body Spirit Festival on the 24th of May at 4 p.m.
Yes, I am indeed. I'm looking forward to it. So excited.
Great. Would you tell us what we need to bring, what we can expect, what it's called, and and then I'll tell them where they can get their tickets.
Yeah, and basically, I think it's called Yang Ying Slow Flow is the name of it. I hope I've got that wrong. And basically, bring yourself, most importantly, and any props that you may feel you need. And what I'd advise you to do, anyone listening, go to the website. I'm sure they'll tell you there what you need to bring. So just to be on the safer. But most importantly, bring it yourself.
Yeah.
Bring the body because you're all welcome.
Good stuff. I often get asked what I need to bring. And it's like, well, you know, it's like the first time you do anything, especially if you're a bit shy, it's like you're not going to, because you look like a pro if you rock up with all the gear. Do you know what I mean? So sometimes people go, well, I'm not going to turn up like that. They're going to think I can do splits and a handstand. So yeah, understandable.
That's true, actually,
and I think that sometimes people don't know what yang and yin is. So do you want to just give a little tickler?
Yeah. So basically, so the yin side is it's most of the posture will be done on the floor and we'll hold them for slightly longer, anywhere between 3 and 5 minutes. So we hold the postures there and it gives you time to rest, to let the body relax, and for the muscles and the fascia to release. And the yang part is where we do like the upward dogs, the downward dogs, and we do the more conventional postures that you see in mainstream classes. But it's slow flow, so you can come and do as little or as much as you want. All you want to do is come and lie on the mat in Savasana the entire class. That too is yoga because you're breathing. So you come as you are and do what you want to do. But I'm there to guide you to have the best experience possible. You can be a complete beginner or someone who has a regular practice. I will adapt the postures to suit your unique body. It's not for you to contort your body in the postures. And it's all about taking the pause. It's to empower you. And it's not for you to worry about how the postures look. What's more important for me is how the postures make you feel. That for me is the yoga. You feel your body. That's how you cultivate the mind-body connection. So you can, the body can tell you, oh, that's a bit too much for me today, so I can back off. And but also to let the yoga and you come together for an amazing experience.
Nice. Would you help me dispel the myth that you need to be flexible for yoga? I get this all the time. And I actually started something called The Unbendables, which was a yoga class for particularly beginner males, because they feel, I think, in the first time in their lives that this is the most intimidating space for them. Whereas women go around being intimidated all our lives. But for men, I do, you know, it's obviously very important, because imagine if all the men in the world did yoga. Yeah. It'd be a very different bloody world, wouldn't it, darling? So
when you think yoga started, it was many men that did it. It's what a transition, you know, with, along the way type thing. But I believe that everyone's a yoga body, as you know, Rachel. And basically, you don't have to come to yoga with anything. Flexibility will come as a byproduct when you get on the mat. And it doesn't matter if you're flexible, because the postures can be adapted for your unique body. And for me, flexibility of the mind is more important than flexibility of the body. You know, it's a journey. You know, we don't call yoga a perfect, it's a practice. But you come on the mat, and every time you come, your body may change in some small way. So it may be you're bending over to try and touch your toes, and you can't touch your toes. But through that journey, as the body begins to stretch and to lengthen, you may start to find the body begins to relax, that begins to release, and you may find that touching the toe may happen. But it's not about touching the toes. It's what you learn on the way down there is important.
The journey,
the self-discovery. That's more important, basically. But you come as you are. There's props, as I say, and I repeat myself, the postures can be adapted. So you don't have to worry about not being able to touch your toes. You know, there's ways in which we'll show you to work the body in a way that allows that journey to begin.
Going on from that, how would you say that you connect to your inner wisdom or your inner guru or your, you know, we can call it many things, but how do you sort of describe that in terms of a yoga practice? Because people always think, oh, it's just a physical practice. And of course, we've got spiritual and psychological, but how would you answer that?
The way in which I try to teach that or explain that is I try to allow my practitioners to experience the practice from the inside out. So they began to connect to their innate wisdom. So they're not distracted by the external stimulation, the external distraction. And that's where they can begin to feel the sensation of the body, experience the breath, and experience what's actually going on the inside out, I think. And even thoughts, because sometimes we have, I like the way that describes things as well, Rach, is that we have the mind, and the mind is always there, but it's like the sky. And then what happens, thoughts come along, and they're like light, fluffy clouds sometimes. And when they're fluffy and light, Rach, we don't get behind them because we're happy and we're just getting on with our life. But occasionally, there's dark, moody clouds that come along, and those are the ones that hang around for a lot longer.
Yeah, that's not occasional in my experience, mate. I have lightning, thunderbolts, storms. You know what I mean? That's my mind. But
I'll talk to you after the session. I'll try to help you later. And the lightning, but absolutely, and that does happen. But then what happens? Then thought storms arise. But when we connect the body, Rachel, we begin to understand that we're okay as we are. And that those thoughts are temporary if we allow them to float away, just like the clouds. And sometimes those positions, that can change in a moment. A yoga posture that you like can take you out of that moment. And then you can really experience it, Rachel. You feel something inside of you that maybe a happiness, or and you're no longer concerned about how the postures look, but it's the way you feel. And sometimes when it happens, Rachel, I call it yoga stoned.
Oh my God, it is yoga stoned.
Or the yoga high. So you get that, you're just taken away and you come out, and that's when you really connect the energy.
Yeah.
But the one class where I always see that the most, Rachel, and I can't replicate anyway, is when you're in a Bikram class and you've got about 30, 40 people together, and they're all moving around, they're fidgeting, and you can see that they're distracted, they're not present. And then suddenly, Rachel, you get them together and they move as one. And you can feel that energy. And even they get it. They come and say, Don, I'm really sorry that we're really hard work, but I get what you're trying to achieve. So when they get that strength that they always had and they tap into that, that's the power of yoga.
Yeah.
That's when you're just not getting your leg behind your head and you come out and you think, woo, you know, and you, because I've had people come to me and say, people really rave about yoga, but I don't experience some of the feelings or the emotions because they're not being taught to connect the mind and the body. That is not being explained to them within the practice. It's just purely asana.
Exactly.
Because yoga, the asana is the picture boy or picture girl of yoga. And it's like a house, Rachel. But it's just, that's the front door. And people are getting stopped at front door. They're not experiencing the other eight limbs or aspects.
I have exactly. Yeah. I'm always like, that's 1/8 of yoga.
Yeah.
So when people say they can't do yoga, I'm like, are you telling me you can't do 7/8?
Exactly. Exactly. And even that, Rachel, but even in the class, I can bring in things like non-harming, so they don't harm themselves, because they're trying to push maybe really hard because they brought that hustle mentality onto the yoga mat. So it's letting them know that it's okay to rest, it's okay to pause. And that's when they can start to really feel what's going on with their body.
And I find that when people practice in a group, that like you touched on there, they draw on each other, and without realizing it, you all sync up, which is why I actually like going to classes. I prefer that. I've got a host of neurodiverse needs, and because of my ADHD and all my other bits, when I'm in a group, it just kind of calms me and focuses me. And everyone's different. Some people prefer to practice on their own, but I always say hand yourself over to someone who's qualified and grounded in themselves, because then your nervous system copies theirs, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And also when you're there as well, because what I also say in the class, Rachel, is that you can connect to whoever or whatever you want to connect to, because it's all about, you know, clearing off all the illusions so you really connect with yourself. And the way I like to describe it as well sometimes, Rachel, is that, again, going back to the mind, because the mind's an amazing tool, but the mind can be so distorted sometimes. But the mind is like, it's got a band in there, is another way I like to describe it. It's got a band in there, and you can always hear the drum. And the drums is that external noise. But every once in a while, you'd hear a violin, or you hear a piccolo. And that's your innate wisdom coming through. Mm-hmm. And that happens to me sometimes, Rachel, when I'm really in the moment, I'm teaching, and something profound comes out of my mouth. Where'd that come from?
You know, believe it or not, Donna, you're a really intelligent woman.
Thank you. Sometimes, Rachel, it's really profound, you know, even for me. It's like, and it wasn't even thought of, you know, I didn't even construct the sentence. It just came from deep within. And that's when you connect with your innate power, whatever you believe with, that's the connection. And yoga, for me, is what can stimulate that.
Yeah, bring you into it.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So some people also are put off by yoga because they might think, well, I'm not spiritual or it's not fun.
My classes are fun. Life is serious enough. So basically, anyone that comes to my class, and my students will tell you, we have fun. I have so many Donna-isms. I believe that fun allows individuals to relax, because people come into classes, Richard, they're so serious. They're putting the postures and yet they're serious. They don't even breathe sometimes because they're holding the breath and they're becoming stiff. So I will even say, you know, smile to relax them. And I believe fun does so too as well. And that enables people to be just who they want to be. Because students sometimes want permission. They look up to the teacher and they try to please you. But I try to model having fun in my class, model falling out the postures, making mistakes, because I'm human and so are they.
Yeah.
And if you do that, then they would do that as well. So, you know, and I always say, and I'm not laughing at, and I laugh with the students. I actually say, I'm not laughing at you, I'm laughing with you. And there can be fits of giggles. I mix up and my regulars know that, and they tell me the right, the left or the right, and I don't get hang up about it type thing. But it's a relaxed class. We can come, as I said, do as little or as much as you want. Wear whatever you want. You know, I've had people come into my classes before wearing jeans and doing, you know, there's no hierarchy in my class. There's no airs and graces. Come as you are, because yoga, I believe, is something that you learn on the mat, maybe, you know, some of the asanas, but you learn skills also that you can take into your everyday life. So to have fun, not to be so serious, to slow down, move away from what you do and not to be in the future, because a lot of people come and they're not in my class. And there's a sequence I do and it invariably lets me see if they're in the future. And it's like left leg, right leg and whatever. And I then do same arm, same leg. And then I bring the class back and I say, oh, you're in the future in the 10 o'clock class when it's the 8 o'clock class. And that normally, you know, brings a smile and everyone knows what kind of class they're in. It's going to be a class where they can relax, breathe and have fun as well. But it's not serious. So if they want to laugh and giggle, you know, as long as they're not too disruptive, you know, then they'll fine. So they'll come and just enjoy the experience.
Great. Yeah. Because the whole, your class at Mind, Body, Spirit as well is set within the setting of Mind, Body, Spirit, which is a lot of fun as well. I don't think people expect it to be as fun as it is, but the different, you know, it's an eclectic group of people that are leading workshops and spaces, and everyone there is just so human, down to earth, really cool, super fun. And how are they going to feel when they come out of your class, babe?
They're going to float out. They're going to be yoga stoned. They're going to be yoga stoned, seriously, yoga stoned.
Yoga stoned and enlightened, clearly.
Yeah, and relaxed and chill, because, you know, my classes reflect my personality as well, you know, and that's what I've been, and I'm authentic. So if I'm not being authentic, then you won't have fun in the class. So that comes through as well. So you'll be able to relax and you'll come out feeling so high that, you know, you want to come back for more. It's a natural high.
To be clear, my body spirit is not a drug dealing space.
Yes, a natural high, natural high. So, you know, you create, you know, you get the endorphins and, you know, you'll come out feeling chilled and relaxed. And that's the feedback that comes from my classes, Rachel, that people come, or they come out and they some people say something that I love. They say, I feel solid, depending on the kind of, you know, they feel really grounded or they feel tired because they've been able to relax so much, or some even fall asleep. Not mean I'm boring, but they fall asleep because they relax so much.
You're not boring, I will confirm. Oh, brilliant. Yeah, people, when they say they're tired afterwards, I'm like, that's because you've allowed yourself to relax,
exactly,
mate.
Yeah, and they really enjoy Sebastian. I don't think anyone rushes out of my class, you know, that Sebastian, they stay there. And what I love seeing as well, Rachel, is that when they really truly connect their mind and body, the stillness they cultivate, which shows that they're at peace in their body and they're absorbing and receiving the benefits of their practice.
Yeah, and that's the power they have to do that for themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
It's amazing, that realisation for
them. Yeah, and they can take that away with them because, you know, we're giving them skills, Rachel, off the mat to take in their everyday life, how to breathe, like to notice if they're becoming stressed, so they can calm those things down. And that's the beauty of yoga. Yoga, you know, is for everybody, for everyone. Mm. And it's popular because it works.
Yes.
And it will continue to be long after we're gone. It's going to be around. It's been around for thousands of years already and for thousands of more. And what I do in my class as well, Rachel, I teach to the room. So I do have like a sequence in my head, but I will throw that away and teach to who's there as well. And then what I do as well, which my students love, that I explain why you're doing something. I'm not a dictatorial, you know, do this, arms up. I explain why you're doing it. And if I need to, I will actually stop the class and sometimes give a little mini workshop so that individuals that leave the class, they can advocate for themselves in other classes and they know hit this part or whatever it is they need to know for their body. But giving them permission to know that they'll also experience the postures in different ways because we're all different, Rachel. So I may feel a sensation in my thigh, but you may not. And that's fine too, because we're all different. Our bodies are unique.
Yeah. And they're different every
day.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well.
Yeah, you come into class one day, your tree's solid. And the next day you come in, you're swaying like a tree in nature. You're outside.
I'm a wibbly wobbly tree in the wind today, babe. Look at my branches. Oh, dear. You said to me that, well, you've already got one book out, haven't you?
Yeah.
You said you're in the process of a second book. You're clever.
I am indeed. Yes, I am. So yes, I've started the research of it. So now I want to start next week actually getting down to start writing it. Because I've given the publisher a deadline. Well, they give me a deadline, which is a bit longer than I wanted, but I think they were right now. So I want to get it out to them sort of September of this year. And then maybe if I do achieve that, then hopefully then I'm thinking publication date sometime next year, because yoga still leaves a lot to decide. People still aren't coming to yoga for various reasons, you know, and we still need to make it more inclusive, more accessible and diverse. And my next book is addressing that in a further way, basically.
Amazing. And what was your first book called and where can people find that?
Okay, my first book was called Teaching Body Positive Yoga. And you can get it wherever you buy your books, at Amazon, or, you know, you can get it anywhere if you don't like Amazon, you know, Waterstones, go on the interweb or the internet and you can find it there, Google it, find it there. And I think if you come to my website or page or whatever, you can see the link to where you can purchase it there as well.
So because it's teaching yoga, body positive yoga, would you say it's just for teachers, or would a practitioner wanting to learn more about their practice be able to read that too?
No, it's not only for teachers, actually, because people that have bought the book that haven't been practitioners or just practitioners and not teachers have said they found so much value from it, because it covers the wide range of things, how to actually adapt the postures. So that's shown in there as well, but the importance of language. And some people said they found it very inspirational. They have it on their bedside and they read it, because I share my story in there as well, and they found that inspirational. So better than any mantra type book. So, that's why I said I'm really happy but surprised by where people have found it useful. People said they use it all the time. They go back to it, they refer to it, and they recommend it all the time. So it's a book that didn't know what it's going to be like, Rachel, but it's out in the world, and it's something I'm proud of.
Yes. Well, I'm proud of you too. It's brilliant.
Thank you.
Yoga teachers and teachers of any so-called perceived spiritual practices are often put on a pedestal, which leads to a lot of abuse of power.
Yeah.
You've mentioned Bikram, which is one of my favourite examples to use, as being, you know, particularly males. How do you think, because I think you're doing this brilliantly, is dispelling that pedestal culture, and also being an inspiration to Black women to teach as well, because let's face it, yoga became it was steeped in Indian culture and tradition, and then all I saw, and I am one of these, is a skinny white woman teaching with who can do splits, you know, and that wasn't from yoga, that's from my dancing and kung fu. So I'm one of them.
Why, Rachel, it's good to unlearn to relearn, because even I had to unlearn, because when I started out, I'm a Black yoga teacher, but I was very lucky that when I first started out, my journey was was more diverse than it was now, actually, because my first yoga teacher was South Asian, second teacher was mixed heritage, and there were two Black yoga teachers I think it was one of the first Ashtanga yoga studios in Southwest London. So I was in an environment where I wasn't the only person of colour. So it wasn't strange. But when I started to go to mainstream, that's when the change happened. Then I was the only person of colour, and then began to see this yoga image of yoga teachers. And then basically when I went to America, and I think America's ahead in terms of yoga, it's been more mature, I began to see people were missing when I came to London. And it wasn't something I set out to do, but it just felt that I need to call out individuals to do so. And the moment for me when I realised, Rachel, that it was important for me as a Black person teacher to be more visible, when I went to Ali Pali with Om Yoga Show, and I think it's one of the International Yoga Day events, and I went, and you know the British weather, it was like rainy, Rachel. I was being interviewed, I think, by Yoga Matters. I had to go there early, have the interview, and then wait, and mine was one of the last classes outside, and I said, if I was me, I'd be going home after this, because it's like, it's really crap. But when I, to my surprise, and I share that picture a lot, Rachel, so many people turned out for me, and they were people of colour.
Wow.
And they said to me at the end, Donna, you need to be visible because we come out to support you. And then I began to then realise the importance of the voice I was starting to have, and me being visible. If it meant one practitioner came, or a teacher who was Black went to TP, I need to be more visible. And then from there, I just, you know me, Rachel, I just do. I there's no airs and graces. I just do. If I see something that needs doing, I do it. Like when I co-created the first UK Black Fitness Festival.
Yes, I did that. I remember that. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So I did that. And there's something more I need to do now, but I don't know what it is, but I just know there's a calling. And that's why I'm passionate about doing this. And in terms of power, whatever. I've got a voice, Rachel, but I'm still Donna underneath it. And even like friends say, oh my God, Donna, you're this and that. And people say things to me and it's like, it's a gift. I love to share it. And I don't think I'll ever get to the state as Rachel where I'd have that power and have people around me with that power, like the big crumbs or whatever. That's not my goal. You know, and I'm glad there's other people out there and there's other doing the same thing, like yourself and, you know, Jivena Hammond and others like that, that we can all come together. And I think my family would keep me so grounded if I started to get up myself. What's going on with you, Donna? I even get that now. And well, not in a horrible way, but you know, people come after you anyway. But yeah. And that's not me in terms, because I like to be of service. I love to be of service. Mm. And I have a gift, and like we all do as teachers. And I want as many people as possible to experience it, because right now there's so much dis-ease, mental health issues. The NHS can't cope.
Yeah.
And yoga is a way that can start to alleviate some of those things that we're seeing.
Yeah.
Because yoga, mind-body connection, you know, it got me out of corporate because I was able to connect to my mind to see what I didn't want to do anymore. Even around people now, my intuition kicks in. It's like, oh, I'm around Rachel. What's going on here? So I can question that. And then, you know.
Most people do question boundaries. Themselves when they're around me, babes. Yeah, question away, babe.
But seriously, it allows me to create boundaries. Mm-hmm. And because of what I'm doing as well, Rachel, I don't have to run around London anymore like I used to, you know, that rite of passage, you know, the 6:30 a.m. class in the morning. And because I'm being authentic and doing what I'm doing, the universe or whatever is availing me to so many opportunities. Like the book, I didn't plan to write the book, but there it is. Book number two. If you said to me, I'd be writing the first book, much of the second book, I would have said whatever. But because of that, Rachel, I'm more empowered and I can do more that resonates with me. And I think because I do that, I can then help others as well with what I'm passionate about doing. So, you know, and I don't, and, you know, power, Rachel, to me, it's, I don't know, it's like, you know, I'm not a person that wants to be like number one or whatever in the world, or I don't know. I just hear, I want to help individuals because the world needs it and it needs more people like us. So that's what I do. But those that do it, I don't know what their motivations are. I don't think I've got a cell in my bone that is like what they have. I'm glad to say that.
No, you're a very, very, very human person, yeah. Which is one of the most attractive things about finding teachers like you. You know, literally that resonance and attraction is like, you know, that's why people are attracted to you, I think, is obviously you've got a brilliant mind. But yeah, so how would you say that it is a spiritual practice through physical movement, and also how it's inclusive if one happens to be an atheist, for example?
Yeah, so it could be a spiritual practice, Rachel, because you can then bring in whatever you believe to the yoga mat. So you can dedicate your practice to the universe, to God, and bring in those rituals and the philosophy of the yoga practice, because there's 8 limbs to yoga. But what I try to do to make my practice includes, anyone can come to my practice. I don't chant and I don't say anyone has to worship a particular deity or have a particular practice. Everyone's able to come and experience the yoga in a way that resonates with them, because I can understand that it will put certain individuals off, because you've got the issue of some people conflating yoga with religion.
Exactly.
And a lot of people aren't coming to yoga because of that. And that's another issue that I have recently. I tried to find out about hiring a church hall. And they wouldn't let me do so because they said it was religious. So that's why I very much stay away from that. But there is a style of yoga for everyone out there. But I do acknowledge, you know, that there's more to yoga than the asanas. And you'll get that. For me, it's bringing you into yourself to connect with who or whatever you believe. And that's how the spiritual side of it is. And, you know, the practices that the 8 limbs of yoga introduce as well, I believe in those as well and bring them into my life, my practice, but not, it's not rammed down somebody's throat that they're going to feel comfortable. Because I've got relatives that they won't go into yoga as well because they're afraid of what's going to be said.
Yeah, of course. It can be belittling, makes you feel like an imposter, an outsider, because, and also like if you're not culturally entrenched in it, you feel like, you know, it's like going to church if you're not a Christian for some people.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And people won't do that. But the good thing with yoga, then there's something for everyone, because you've also got the Egyptian yoga, the Kemetics yoga, which is now being spoke about a lot more.
That exactly.
It doesn't only just come from India, even though there's different debates. Yeah, it's African, you know, Egyptian. But for me, it doesn't matter where it came from, originated, as long as it gets someone to experience it in a way that resonates with them. That's the most important thing. You know, no one needs to claim it. You know, yoga's for everybody.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah. That's our favourite. Yoga is for everybody. I love that. Oh, babes. Well, I think that's we're good to wrap up. How do you feel?
I hope I answered your questions.
You answered them beautifully, mate. And I'm just going to send everyone to Mind Body Spirit Festival website. So it's mindbodyspiritfestival.co.uk. Thank you, Donna Noble. You're an absolute beauty. And I love you.
Mwah. Ditto. I love you too. And thank you for having me.
Thanks, mate. Always. Have a great day.
You too. Take care.
Bye, my darling.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Mind Body Spirit Festival podcast. We would love to connect with you in person at one of our epic events. Go to mindbodyspiritfestival.co.uk for tickets and information. I will see you there. Don't forget, you can also follow us on Instagram, MBS Wellbeing, for behind the scenes content, updates, and offers. Stay cosmic, you beautiful soul.